voor Jan Kippen now, and we would like to do a shtickle. The Rishonim were very nice enough that Nitzavim, Torah was nice enough to put Parsha Tshuva Nitzavim. I guess there's some sort of remiss for it. And we're going to look at an Akedah who deals with a very important issue. I'd like to preface a little bit the sort of the relevance of this Akedah. If a person is honest with himself, if we're honest with ourselves, our avodas Hashem is a patchwork. When you look at what the Torah says, it says if, you know, 99% of the people are going to be tzaddikim gemurim and tzaddikim, yeah, occasionally there's a guy who does who does an avera, so we have tshuva from a kapara and a karban and a vidur and a chatas and that. But it's hard to define a situation where everybody's always doing tshuva and say that that's normal. It's like medically speaking, you define a disease. I mean, growing teeth is a painful experience, but it's not called a disease because it happens to everybody. That's normal, and so on. The disease is defined in terms of the unusual, the natural. It is a strange situation that the world seems to be, by and large, broken, and everybody's busy doing tshuva all the time, and every year we have Yom Kippur, and so on. The Torah itself says, you know, if it comes on our arm, and so on. It seems as if the world is a basically failed place. And yes, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is always there to take back failed people. In this whole this whole putting Baal Tshuva versus Tzadik Gomer and so on, and dealing with what is better and what's right and so on, it's a thing that Rishonim have dealt with. And it's not just an abstract issue, philosophical issue. It really has a lot to do with our attitude. Because at the end of the day, if the whole world is flunking, I remember I had a math teacher who was a big genius, and his tests were usually five extraordinarily difficult problems. I mean, you're talking about really, really unsolvable problems. And a 40 on the test was the best guy, the brilliant guy in the class, got a 40 on his geometry test. And you know, he knew that. It was, you know, he understood it wasn't. But a 40 became the grade that you were proud with. I pulled off a 40 means I got two of his problems I answered completely and well. But so that became sort of thing of pride. Is really the situation of bits and pieces of failures, l'chatchila, n'abchatchila, it's a topic that the Akedah goes through a little bit and we'll deal with it. Okay, Fa'atarei says, כל כל פני הדבר מלא אמיתיים צודקים מודיבר בבוה שזכן ראשונה במקום שבעל תשובה עומדים אין צדיקים גמורים יכולים לעמוד. So he quotes a bavua, we're obviously cutting him into the middle of a paragraph, but he's quoting a bavua that says that בעל תשובה are above צדיקים שנאמר שלום שלום לרחוק ולקרוב and so on. And many people, he says, had an issue with this. At the end of the day, no matter how well you patch up something, it's not as good as when the thing is good to start with. And so on. So most Mefarshim explain it that it falls under the category of the Fum Tzaragra. It's certainly about tshuva is not as good as somebody who's a tzaddik gomer, but he gets a lot more schar because he went through a lot more difficulties, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu measures his schar in terms of tzar. Now he says, Ha'omna, ki svarazu eino meskemes mashanim tzadivei ha-filosof, sha'omasham sha'ha'ish ha'yosher, sha'ein lo tayves ruos, the Akedah is quoting Aristotle,
The Rambam also does in this case, and I mean he's referring to him, I guess, but he puts down something which seems to be maximatic, that the perfect, if you ask yourself, you have two people, one of them would like to be over an Aveira, but restrains himself, the other does not want to do the Aveira. The one who does not want to do the Aveira is superior to the one who does want to do it. So if you have a person that would like to defraud people, he's got these great schemes, but he holds himself down. And you have somebody else who only would like to do things that are honest, the superior is the person who wants to do things, only things that are honest. That's what Aristotle says, and that seems to be sit well with the seichel, that a person who is good means he only desires good, craves good, wants good, and the other person who craves bad or evil is but holds himself back is okay, but he's not as good as the person who doesn't even crave bad things. That's what Aristotle said, and that seems to be logical. The Rambam argues that, he says, V'hina, Rava Mora Zochazos HaSvara, and he brought Rias from the Pasuk. It says, Nefesh Ra Yifsara. There's a Pasuk in Mishlei that a wicked person craves bad, then he is a bad person. In other words, a person is defined by the things he craves. And it says that Tzadik loves doing Mishpat, and so on and so forth. And it says, Kol HaGadol Mechaber Yitzchak Limenu. Then he brings Chazal the other way, the Rambam. It says the Fum Tzaira Agra. It says Kol Gadol Chaveri Tzugal Mimenu. It says Al Yoma Adam I Efshi B'Psar Chazil Vishes Klayim Avul Efshi Ma Esav Avishu B'Shvayim Gozalai. So Rambam brings three Mamori Chazal that say the opposite, that say that the harder it is, and most specifically, it says a person should not say Chaz is yucks, or Kelayim are out of style, but you should say they're great, but what can I do? Kadosh Baruch Hu's goes on me. So the Rambam says the following hachra, and it's a sheet in its own right worth pursuing. The Rambam says there is the difference between mitzvahs that are chok and mitzvahs that are mishpat. And let's explain this a little bit. First of all, this gives us an understanding as to the distinction between chayk and mishpat. The distinction is not can we fathom the reason. The distinction lies in how am I supposed to be mekayim the mitzvah. Let's give an example. Let's explain why it's like that. In a relationship between a man is courting a woman, a husband and a wife. There are two types of activities that go into a demonstration of the care that one has for the other. One is things that I understand that the other person needs. For instance, it's been a few hours, the other person must be hungry. I know, it's been a while since we've eaten and I'm hungry. It's cold, it's raining. So the things that I understand are needed, I project that on her, and I do something on her behalf. That's one element of things. There's a second element. And those things I do because I understand that it's cold now and I need to get a coat. I need to get her a coat. I need to get an umbrella. I need to get her an umbrella. There's a second category of things. There are things that I, for the life of me, can't fathom as to why it's necessary. I don't understand why those shoes are not good to go out with. It doesn't look to me all the same. But the other person does care. So the second half is the understanding of the fact that I may not understand the problem with it, but since the other person cares about it, it's very meaningful to me. So there are both of these are important elements in my bonding with the other person. One is that I understand those needs that are understandable. It's not that I'm bringing her something to eat because that, you know, that's her crazy wishes. She wants that, so that's, so we'll eat. If it's been 8 hours since we've eaten, obviously the person's hungry. And then there's also doing something for her which she doesn't understand, which I don't understand. And yet, if it's important to the other person, it's important to me as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us two sets of mitzvahs. The mishpat mitzvah is there so that the things that my seichel chaps, the seichel is also part of the mitzvah. Use your seichel. For instance, if after 8 hours that we've been together, the other person doesn't tell me that they're hungry, and I don't buy her food, then there's something wrong with me. And I'll say, very innocently, I'll say, but you never told me that you're hungry. Well, we've been together for 8 hours, you're starving, why would I be starving? On the other hand, if let's say the person needed something that's just their personal taste, the time is correct. If you didn't tell me that you don't like going to this place for some personal reason that I don't fathom, then how would I know? But now that you've told me, because it's important to you, I'm doing it. Both of them fill in a void. I think we spoke about this when we spoke about a Kesher HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about Avos Hashem, but both of these complement each other. So the Rambam says, in the world of mitzvahs, if a person goes around with the attitude, I would love to steal, but what can we do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a cost of its aser. That's not a full kiyum of the mitzvah of Osig Novu. And because mitzvahs that are mishpat were given for both the hands to fulfill and the seichel to fulfill. And therefore, if my das is not there yet, then I haven't fulfilled it. On the other hand, those mitzvahs that are a chok, like kashrus, I need to do them because despite the fact that I don't understand them, but for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're important and they're precious. That's the Rambam's Achra. So Rambam says, the psukim that speak about a good person being inherently good, being good with his neshama, with his ritzonis, that's talking about mishpat, and the pasuk and the mamorim dealing with that a person do things just because it's also, even though he doesn't understand it, that deals with chol. That's the Rambam Shita. He says, according to that, v'hinei mevur, so gom in Rambam Shita, ke'acha shekiru devarim chol ma'ashib le'matayv esagufiyas, ma'advarim megunim, lefizach nushit. If the Rambam agrees to Aristotle, as regards all those types of averis that are physical, that a person can understand from his own seichel. Loma shah ish hayosha meshol taivis hahein hu me'ula me'akasha sheshton loi v'koyvish oisa, to say that the person who doesn't have a taiva is better than a person who has one. Kol shen shimai mai mazeh shimitam atam loma shanosha shnutzu mikol chatus adem ashat v'sanem merayu v'nai v'dofi. So that Keda asks, according to Rambam Shita, that the person is not supposed to even desire the Ra. So if he fell in and actually was nichshel in it, and now he's coming back doing tshuva, he certainly should be less chashiv and less good. Now, even the Rambam doesn't bring down this maimah about tzaddikim, about Jew being bigger than tzaddikim gumer, aviskir v'hoide boy, and it could be that he holds his talking about this maimah of Makos Shabbat Shuvayim is talking about only averis that are choik, but he says that can't that's hard to believe, and he has a kasha. We'll see the kasha in a second. I want to just stop a minute on the point that he's making. So he's asking a kasha from a mokash bar tshuva omdim ein tzadikim gemurim omdim sham. I'm not sure that this kasha is such a powerful kasha in the Rambam. I want to try to explain it. The Rambam says, the Rambam is not talking about the person and everything he's gone through. What is the finished product of a tzaddik in the world of mitzvah sichli is supposed to look like? What is a tzaddik in the world of mitzvahs chuk supposed to look like? The question is not how did he get there, and the fact that he went through a road where he was nichshol and now he's not nichshol anymore, and so on and so forth. That's not the point that the Rambam is addressing. The Rambam is addressing at this stage when the person has gotten to perfect himself. Well, what is he supposed to look like? So I don't quite see it as being such a powerful kasha. The Rambam is not talking about where you started the process. The question is, what does it look like when a person is a shalim after he's overcome his inclination? So certainly a Baal Tshuva can become a shalim. If he's done so much tshuva that he no longer hankers for any of the avera, that's fine. Then according to Rambam Shita, that's really good. So I'm not sure about his kasha, but be it as it may, he has this kasha in the Rambam. Now he has a different shita. Kimasha omun shabal tshuva oimdi b'mokshan tzadikim gemurim yichon lamud u'mishum greyas habal tshuva ki ish hasonim mikol ha'shein batuch lam b'echol ha'melkim b'fonav ki rab mevakshas nafshe. There are mefarshim. It's very interesting. It's said over in modern day language, it's already in Rishonim. They say the Baal Tshuva stands in a place where Tzadik Gomer doesn't stand. Let's quote it exactly. Mokhen Shabbat Tshuva Oimdim Tzadikim Gomer Enichon Lamod. In the place where Tzadikim, where Baal Tshuva stand, Tzadikim Gomer can't stand. And they, in Yiddish, it goes with a little bit of a twist because the smell is terrible. In other words, it's because of the chisaron of the Baal Tshuva staying in a place where you still have the remnants of Avera and whatever it is, and the tzaddik is too refined to stand there. That's a Yiddish veritel, and he says that some mefarshim, and he brings and he asks his kash on it. So that's not the pshat. Omnam hanira elai toivi yasha. So next paragraph, v'yishraelian. How does one explain it? He says, Torah and philosophy are going to differ on this one. I want to explain this phrase. When he says Torah and philosophy are going to differ, it's like he's saying a big chiddush here. But it is, and let's explain a little bit what he means. Dakeda, like many of the Shayim for him, like the Rambam himself and so on, understood that philosophy, both in the sense of its working through issues using your head, and many of the things they had actually worked out were right. They were on target. It was not, there was nothing wrong. They referred to Aristotle constantly. The Rambam says anything under the sphere of the moon will leave Aristotle. In other words, anything that has to do with this world, Aristotle had it right. Aristotle was a big chacham, and therefore his train of thought would not in itself be a problem. There's no issue with his with what he's thinking. The problem is with some of the foundations that he's building. It's the axioms you're putting on. Philosophy in its thinking process is logic. Logic should work. It's hard for us to understand worlds that logic doesn't work. But philosophy besides logic includes a set of axioms. Logic itself is worthless unless it's based on some axiom. And the axioms here are problematic. And this is what he's going to explain. Kihine be'emes ha'filosofen lo yaminu keishmaila ba'noshim nesunim elakai sala azeh isha ramos. We pass maisa vachas berotzal pim tzvosi yis'ala. V'lo yishikvu yis'ala schar lo v'shumponim. al yoimus ashlemus magiel chol ish beteva kefima sheashma atzem idus umeskolois v'yashkofa tzenekel yisal ozekla. Let's talk about this. Maybe we'll translate the words first and then we'll explain it. He says the philosophers don't believe that people have some sort of chshivas that God gave to a specific person, b, because of the things that he's done using his free will by dint of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not give schar in it. They say that every person's shleimus is a natural it's a natural attainment. It's depending on how shalom a person is in his both midos and in his understanding, without HaKadosh Baruch Hu being involved. So let's explain the two mahalchim, and we'll understand the difference. According to the philosophers, and we're speaking about a thought, an understanding of the world that's not all that different from Chachmei Yisrael in many ways. They define good and bad. They define a God. The God is the ultimate understanding, the ultimate wisdom. There's good and there's bad, and there are people that are good, there are people that are bad. That's facts. And anything that is not good all the way and needs to be somewhat fixed is not as good as that which is good. A refurbished model is refurbished. It's not a new model, and that's it. So we're dealing with definitions, dispassionate definitions of almost inanimate objects. Person A plays football well. Person B has good moral fiber. Person C plays the piano remarkably. These are facts. There is no other element involved. Our understanding of Tov and Ra is, yes, there is an ultimate Tov. There's a model of ultimate Tov, that's Tov itself. But there's Hashkocha within the Bria, and there are people that an HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a person, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him challenges. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects him to overcome it, and he wants him to get to a good place. The entire interaction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and people revolves around this point over here. So when you ask, so for instance, let's give an example. Let's say I'm a manufacturer, and I need to manufacture, I don't know what, iPhones. So any iPhone that falls apart, that breaks, that's not so good, whatever it is off the assembly line into the refurbished department. Fine. And at best we can say that something is as good as brand new. That's the best we can do. But let's say I'm trying to teach a child certain skills. Let's say I'm trying to teach him certain things like patience and this and that. And I have him build it, and then I take it apart. Or he makes mistakes and he learns from those mistakes. That is not less perfect than the model that never needed to be refurbished. Because the point of that, of this iPhone, the one that I was working with the kid, was not the iPhone, it was the kid. And I gave him an iPhone, I said, let me see you put this together. And when he makes a mistake, I tell him, why'd you make a mistake in this? And what do you need to undo the mistake? And so on and so forth. So there's a big difference between when it's centered, when everything is sort of an object, or when there is a metzias behind that. And that's what he says. If you're asking me, if I have a school and I want to admit only the best, the guy who had to take the test a second time, even though he worked hard and got it, is second best. Yes, I'm proud of the fact that you did so much effort to get in here, but if I need to choose the best, it's not the best. But let's say the school here deals with helping kids develop, helping them take responsibility for their lives, helping them understand how to cope with issues. Then, if they fail and they retry it again and it goes well, then it realizes it's tachlis and it's not the second best. This is the best in this place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the philosophers looked, they had a picture of God and Tov and Ra, which on the surface was similar to our picture of it. Mitzad the Pnimius, it was a completely different world. It was a world that, in the philosophers' world, there is no Pnimius. It's just like there's atoms, there's molecules, there's virtue and dishonor, and this is virtue, and something that once wasn't virtuous, so today it is virtuous, okay, so that's a refurbished model, that's all. But if we understand it as a pedagogue's instrument, and this is, by taking this apart and putting it together again, I'm teaching you skills in electronics, I'm teaching you skills in coping, I'm teaching you skills in whatever it is, then we're dealing with, this is the way it ought to be. It's a shlemus. That this is the perfect radio. You can keep taking it apart and put it together again. So the taking apart and putting it together, not refurbishing it, that's the mahalach of it. So he says, "Ki mayol ish." And so according to philosophers, anything that disturbs a person from attaining his perfection is not good, because overcoming Yetzirah is simply getting rid of a problem. It's like we had a flood, so wasted a half a morning clearing out the flood, and now we can first sit down and put together the iPhones. But let's say the purpose of the lab is to teach the people patience, coping skills, and so on and so forth. The flood didn't disturb the thing, and we wasted a morning on the flood. The flood was part of the lessons. So there's a dramatic difference between the philosophers and our view on things. They didn't dehair the person in the person, and didn't dehair the lack of it, the lack of dehairing it, by the philosophers. The philosophers see the thing as a cold object. If it's good 100%. Then it's perfect. If it's not good, then it's second best. We understand it that the perfect lies in the perfecting. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world as a place where to do things, and therefore it's a very different world. Omnam, he says, let's read it. They certainly don't deny the paradigm of perfection that lies in the perfect model that is 100% perfect. Omnom yaminu shemitzad yehudi atorah loikis chamtsa se chui lekuras charet zayni lechol ish ben oshim v'tiruchu maso v'tzar ma'zitu. But they understand that a person's schar and by extension his accomplishment lies in the effort expended and the challenge met, rather than the etzem perfection. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the perfect law of an esrei. He can make as many as he wants. He needs what he does need. What he did express a need for is people who make the effort to get that law of an esrei. Just think about it. If somebody comes, he has a mitzvah that he needs to put a lot of effort in, it certainly is going to be better than the person that came without tzar and so on and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about this. He sums it up and he says, so once again, if you're talking mitzvah the perfection of the object itself, certainly philosophers are right. No, somebody didn't even have a hamid if I have a more perfect object than the person who had, and certainly who struggled with it. But the perfection mitzad what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind the Bria, what he has in mind the Bria, the dynamics of the Bria, that's very different. I want to talk a little about this, elaborate a bit on it. Did I ever tell you the muscle with the breast or with the lamp, the king that sent last week? So, part of our problems, part of our challenges on a Yom Kippur, and more, I guess, in a length of time, in terms of as time goes on, we have the following issue. You know, when you're young, when you're 16, and whatever it was that age that you get turned on to Yiddishkeit, and you know, somebody made a difference, you decide you're going to be kiveik, and you're going to learn 95 hours a day, you're going to be perfect, and so forth. Once, twice, three times, four times. I mean, at some point you wise enough, and then you're out. And then you look back and you realize, listen, it's bits and pieces here and there, nothing exciting. That attitude takes away everything good that you ever had. Because we're looking at the perfection from the object. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, if what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants out of each and every one of us is that little perfect doll that's called perfection, then we're wretched. And even, let's say, by the end of days, we'll have patched up, and there'll be a bit here and a piece here, and there'll be this and that. It's really fourth rate. And we know that. But that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted people perfecting themselves. The struggle, objects HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make as many as he wants. The area that he left open for us was to do things by choice, against difficulties, and so on. So the Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu lies in that one. There's a mice of somebody in Kutsk, the Kutska Shita was extremely critical and constantly criticized everything they did. Introspectively, they criticized themselves, that things are not genuine, that things are not what they should be. That was the Shita of Kutsk, very tough Shita. Regine was the opposite. Regine was very, very, everything was beautiful, everything was perfect. The Rebbe sort of had the aura of perfection. Everything was gold and silver, malchustik, and very, very elevated, and everything was like tip-top. They dressed very nicely. It was all an expression of kind of godless autumn, sort of, like, translating into Litvish terms. And there was once a Kotzke Chassid who married into a family of visionists. And he was very depressed. And he came and he asked his Rebbe, and he said, you know, it's so terrible. It comes a week before Yom Tov. My father-in-law and his sons and the six siblings, brother-in-laws and brothers, they dress themselves up in the finest to go to the Rebbe for Yom Tov, to their Rebbe. And the simcha on their face is incredible. And they have a band that plays as for them as they leave the town to go there, and they're so happy and so devoted, and Mam just see the Shechina on them. And me, he said, I'm always doubting myself. I think myself, am I really ready for Geula? Do I mean Pesach, or do I mean myself? And what's my Abdus, you know, my Shibud, etc., and so on and so forth. And I'm a broken person. I just constantly think of all the chasonas that are possible. And the Kutzke answered him in his laconic style. In wer sucht was der Eibischter will? And who's to say what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? In other words, you're putting down, you're positing something. Because they look so accomplished and so well and so good, this is perfection. And Kutzke's famous rattle was, there's nothing more whole than a broken heart. And it's something to understand. The avodah of tshuva is really the central avoda of us. It is a world where we move ahead by stumbling. There's a chazal that says HaKadosh Baruch Hu created hundreds of worlds, and he said that it's not good. This world finally came to this world and said, "This is this Dana Hanili. This is a good world." So everybody talks about it, and the Pashta Pshat is, I mean, the Pashta Pshat on many levels is that our the binion of our world, the Dana Hanili of our world, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from our world, is a world that can stand on the top of, I think it was 900 some odd worlds that needed to be raised in order to have this world. So somebody would say, what a waste of time. I mean, imagine this world would be 900 times as big if you would, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have gotten it right the first time. No. Our world is a world that's built after having tried so many times and still built it. That's the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. So we always need to look at things through two different angles. One is, what is perfection? Not to be happy with baininess and say, well, this is good enough. Certainly perfection is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. But on the second thought, it's the getting to perfection that's really it. And therefore, even if the person has to keep picking himself up time and again, as long as he's at it and he's sincerely moving at it, then in a certain sense, that is a perfection. Very, very, it's a kind of, it's an almost impossible paradox to think about, but that's the truth. The truth is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the world, the situation of the world is where Ein Tzadik Ba'al Tzadik Lo Yechta, everybody's been there, or everybody we know has been there and back and again and again and again. It's, you know, and there is progress over the years. We do move forward. I think everybody can keep looking at themselves, and as they grow and as they mature and as they go through more life experiences and more ruchnius, they do grow. It's always a process of kind of tshuva, but it's a materialistic understanding where perfection is the little doll that says Mr. Perfect on it. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is the person struggling with his self. The key is not the being perfect. The key is to struggle to keep being perfect. Therein lies the perfection that's attainable for us. Mach Shem Teva, Mekut Keben Shiar, and we should be Zeicha, it's hard to keep doing tshuva, I guess, or to reach perfection. I guess that the world, that the tshuva of the world add up to the final perfection that will be there someday. And we'll have the fruit of all those generations that struggled and did tshuvas and moved the world forward. Hopefully we'll be the generation that is zocha to those pairs. A good year.